right. It is 5:45 on April 28, 2020, and we're calling the Northtown Municipal Utility District regular meeting to order. I'll hand it off to Brenda in a second here, but the first thing we wanted to do was to call roll. So I'll go through the board of directors first. Do we have Brenda Richter here?
Here.
Chris Capers?
Here.
Felix Amaro?
Here.
Robin Campbell?
Here.
And Lee Hill?
Over here.
All right. And I'll go through the consultants. Scott Foster?
Here.
The district's engineer, Cheryl Allen?
Here.
The district's financial advisor? Let's see. Clayton Chandler? Don't think he needed to be here today.
Yeah, no.
Just
I don't
checking.
Think he... Yeah.
All right. Robert Anderson?
Here.
District's operator, Alan Douthat?
Present.
District's bookkeeper, and Mona Oliver, district's general manager.
Here.
And let's not forget Richard Fidal, district's landscaper.
Here.
All right. Well, did I miss anyone? Is there anyone else on the line? All right. Any public on the line? Okay, I don't think we have any members of the public present. All right, well, looks like we have all we need here. Brenda, we can go ahead and proceed with the meeting if you'd like to take the reins.
Okay, we've already officially called the meeting to order. I'll go ahead and ask if there are any residents present who would like to have any communication with the board, or are there any board member announcements? Okay. If not, I'm assuming that the bond items are yours, Cheryl?
Yeah, I'll start out, and then Scott can chime in as we go through it. You should have gotten a separate email from Deborah late this afternoon, if you're looking for that. But basically, we have been... Robin and Felix and Scott and I have been meeting with to discuss the 2020 bond issue. And, you know, we came to the board and gave you one bond issue amount, and then Scott got some comments back from the city and from the county, and I'll let him go through those. But in any case, what they required was some changes to the construction plan, which caused the bond issue to increase. So it went from basically $7 million to $10 million. And so the numbers that you were sent this afternoon by Deborah include those costs. And we have rerun those. We did, you recall, on the other numbers that we attempted to keep it as close, the final maturity to as close as the district's outstanding bond issues. And we had to, with the increase, we had to raise to extend it one more year. So your outstanding debt will be paid off in 31. And this debt will be paid off in 33, so it wasn't that much further. Based on the interest rate that we used, I'm sorry, does somebody have a question? Okay, so based on the interest rate that we used, which was 3%, and we still feel pretty good about that, even with the pandemic in the market, the tax rate would have to go from debt service tax rate would have to go from 26.10 to 31.05, and but we've got a lot of time between now and the time that we actually sell these bonds. So we've already run this structure through the city of Austin, and they have given us a letter saying they agree with us that we should do shorter bonds and not longer bonds, so we're good in that respect. And I believe that Eddie has been, DeRuce has been working on the bond application with Scott, and that is finished now and all signed and ready to go. And so to the extent that you guys are happy with this report, then I think we can get it bound up and sent on to the TCEQ. The next couple of items under the on the agenda there has to do with the resolutions. One is to the TCEQ and the others to City of Austin. And Carter, you might want to go through those. But everything else is done, and if y'all are happy, we're ready to go.
I do have a question.
Okay.
This is Director Hill. What changes did the city or county require that would cost us a, you know, close to 50% increase in cost of the project?
There's Director Hill, this is Scott Foster. The one of the primary changes in the design and the comments was the city and county asked us to do additional boring rather than do an open cut in there through the middle and the median. So that actual construction cost is 3 to 4 times higher, and that's quite a bit of the cost. The other item was we are now using the higher end of the our opinion of probable cost that we put together for the bond application based upon the market conditions versus before we were using a slightly lower one. And I believe the plan was to use some of the district's cash operating funds at that time to partially fund it. So you ended up with the initial lower bond amount versus at this point in time, everything is anticipated to be fully funded through this bond series. So I believe there's two items that are that led to the increase.
Thank you.
So just to let you know about the market, if any of you are concerned about the interest rate and that sort of thing, your bonds are out to, as I said, 2033. And we sold bonds earlier today that were out to 2044, and those bonds sold at a 305. So I think we've got a lot of cushion, if you will, in the interest rate, assuming we don't have some other surprise like we're all living through right now. But you're not approving the issuance of the bonds tonight. You're merely approving the process to get started. And once the TCEQ has approved it, we then immediately send it to the City of Austin. And then they approve it. And once they approve it, we'll come back to you with what market conditions are then.
Thanks, Cheryl. This is Carter. And Cheryl basically explained the purpose of these resolutions here, 2B and 2C on the agenda. Both of these are basically what their titles suggest. One's a resolution authorizing application to the TCEQ, and the other one's authorizing application to the City of Austin afterward for the approval for the project and for approval of the issuance of the bonds. So those are pretty straightforward there. And then along with the increase in the bond amount and the scope there, 360 PSI has submitted a revised engagement letter for their service of preparing the BAR, the bond application report for the TCEQ. And what we'll need to do at this meeting is just approve those two resolutions and then the revised engagement letter with 360 PSI.
Do I have a motion for those? Do I have a motion for items 2B, C, and D?
Yes, Robin Campbell. I make the motion.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
This is Director Capers. I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Is all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay,
aye.
Everyone. Okay, all in favor. Anyone opposed? Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Carter, is there any action or anything that needs to happen under 2E?
2E? I don't believe so unless has anything else.
From a schedule standpoint, we will be submitting that probably early next week to CCEQ to start that process. So thank you all for y'all's help.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay, and I think there's no action necessary under item 3, correct? It's just kind of an FYI from what I could see.
Yeah. And, of course, I wrote this memorandum at Mona's request here just kind of as a gentle reminder of the types of things that we can all do on calls to make them go smoother. And, you know, I violate plenty of these, but just generally, just if everyone just keeps in mind to try to limit noise as much as possible from the background and not interrupting and that sort of thing. And I think we'll be set. I think we had a good test run last time, and this time should be smoother. So thank you all.
Yeah, I would encourage people to put their phones on mute if you can whenever somebody's doing talking like Carol was, just to help out so that we don't have so much static in the line and things of that nature, although I know it's difficult at times. Okay, item number 4, district's response to coronavirus and related protocol policies and procedures, including the 4 items there. Who's in this, Carter? Is this that subcommittee?
This is Carter, yes. So this would be the subcommittee, and I've spoken with them about this as well, but I guess Felix and Chris can take it.
Okay. We'll probably differentiate different portions of it as we go along between Director Tabers and myself. Apologize. So one of the primary questions that came up was the question around the recommendations that were made during the last board meeting. At this point, our current recommendation is to extend those like we did till the next board meeting with a caveat, and that is, as most of you know, the presidential task force has released a series of phased reopenings for the states. Most governors are following those phased guidelines. And those guidelines give stipulations as to how a state has to be performing in its new and existing cases of the coronavirus. And then so each hurdle that's met allows them to expand the state's shelter in place and or now in this case how large group sizes can be that meet and whether or not folks would still be required to wear masks and things like that when they're in public. From that standpoint, we were thinking of using those hurdles as our strategy for kind of returning the district to its normal phase. But because we only meet on a monthly basis, the hurdles happen in best case scenarios about every 14 days with the roughly 45-day endpoint to starting the third hurdle. With that in mind, what we were recommending was having the board approve what we approved last time as it related to Crossroads handling utility services with particular members of the district who might have been impacted by the virus. And in addition to that, some things that we'll talk about as it relates to the facilities and parks and other things within the district, knowing that we might get more green lights along the way. So the recommendation would be to have the board reaffirm what we put in place last month through a few days after next month's board meeting, the 31st of May, but allow the Public Safety Committee to lift those restrictions as those are lifted by the governor and the state. And an example would be, in this case, when the governor releases and restricts public parks and access to things like golf courses and things like that, we would correspondingly lift any restrictions that we had in place, and folks would be allowed to use our disc golf facilities, with the understanding that as a board, we would be still asking Mona's team, because of its staff size being relatively small, to keep notices up about social distancing and the fact that the equipment is play and use at your own risk, because we cannot deep clean it at a schedule that's consistent with maintaining it at that level. So I'll pause there because I know it was a lot, but generally speaking, it would be to move forward this month as we did last month, knowing that there's a lot of persons in our district who are just now feeling the effects of the virus impact. So we had some that were impacted last month. During the month of April through the end of the month of April, we have a lot of folks who are just now, for example, getting a layoff or a termination notice from their employer and are moving to unemployment and that sort of thing. So we're just looking to extend it out and then follow the guidelines of the phase releases and the governor's lifting of restrictions.
Felix, is the intention, so like there's quite a bit of controversy, it appears right now, related to whether or not like the city of Austin's plan or the governor's plan to reopen businesses and things of that nature, whether that was the right move or the wrong move. So is the plan that like if the city opens up parks and things of that nature, is the plan to go ahead and if the city opens up parks, are we going to plan on opening them up immediately in line with what the city does?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I'm glad.
Is that to our discretion to open them up as we see fit?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'm really glad you asked it that way, because what we have to understand is that Texas, for all intents and purposes, with the number of COVID cases that we had and the number of fatalities, pretty much started phase one of the task force guidelines almost immediately, within about 3 days of the original task force guidelines. That was about 11 days ago that they were released. Texas was effectively in phase one. That was, we were not like in New York with the numbers that we had. However, to your question, we're also a small park system with a small park staff. So we have confirmed that while we might do things like reopen or allow folks to use facilities like, say, the dog park, we'd still be posting signs that would indicate to them that that we don't, you know, that the park is not being deep cleaned, so it's use at your own risk, that there would be signs posted that at the beginning, say, of the disc golf course, as well as other locations, indicating that we would still recommend social distancing while they're in the park. Obviously, if you come together in a group, that's not a problem, but people who don't know each other remaining in that social distancing space. But for example, we will not be immediately opening our restroom facilities because we simply cannot keep them clean, and we've been unable to find, say, for example, commercial dispensers of sanitizer and soap. Those are all sold out at the moment. We would really like to, up that scalability. So while we might make it okay for folks to go ahead and continue to use the parts of the park that were previously open, and maybe a few additional ones like the disc golf and the dog park, unlike the state, who might have more reasonable or larger staff to accommodate that, we might keep things like the restroom areas closed and keep signs up indicating that, for example, the picnic tables and the playscapes are not sanitized on a regular basis. And so that's a.
And I would even request that the consideration be given whether the dog park should, just in all honesty, because Pflugerville is one of the hot spots for the city of Austin area and surrounding areas as far as the number of COVID cases, and we are an ETJ of the city of Pflugerville. I trust.
No, we're not.
Okay.
We're ETJ of city of Austin.
Okay. So,
Well, I would say for our purposes, if you guys have any particular recommendations, for example, if that would be something that the board would like to see, say, the dog park specifically opened at phase two, that is something we could do. But realistically speaking, at this point, we're probably, once people are coming to the park in large numbers, we're going to be hard-pressed to keep them out of certain areas. Our thought was just to make sure they understood the social distancing recommendations and guidelines, and the fact that it is the seating, for example, is not sanitized. So that way they can make their own deliberate choice if they want to go in there, and we will have posted signage at the locations as well as at the signboard indicating what our current cleaning schedule is. And then as we are able to more effectively meet like the phase two restrictions, make it a little easier. We can clean the restrooms, for example, if we were to open them, but not on a every 4-hour basis, which isn't possible for us to do. There's more extenuating time periods that you just have to regularly clean and put, the facilities. And at that point, we could consider reopening the restrooms. Those are our main areas. And right now, until probably indefinitely, something's got to really change before we put water back in the public water fountain, right? Because that's a whole nother consideration beyond the use of facilities is folks drinking out of a common water fountain. So that area will remain closed until further notice.
Is there a general consensus that everybody is on board with the dog park opening, or what?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Okay. The dog park, I think, should come second, but when will the walking path and whatnot be open, regardless of the pavilion? I think that opening the disc golf and the walking path should be our first stage, and soon. People are getting claustrophobic.
So, this is Ms. Talking, and our walking path has not been closed just because there's
differences
to it. The disc golf, I think since regular golf has been reopened back up, we were talking as a committee, the way the groups play, they're so spaced apart, as long as we have a sign in the front, we feel that they can distance themselves from each other.
Yeah, because typically the groups that come together, they ride together, they play together. We know we're not going to keep them social distance from one another, but that's a small group under the first phase guidelines, 10 or under. That's not a problem. And then, of course, between the groups, naturally golf and disc golf cause you to separate by a whole hole at least so that you're not in the field of being struck by the object being hit or thrown. So, I think you're 100% right. What this would do, Lee, is just say, you can. And I guess we'll add to that, you can use the pavilion even, but we won't be doing rentals for the pavilion or saving or, protecting a space for a party or any of that kind of thing. If somebody wants to come with their family and use the pavilion, they're more than welcome to do that. But there will be signs indicating that the facilities are not cleaned or sanitized on a frequent basis. So that's just another use at your own risk. But if you want to use the pavilion, the walking trails, even the playscapes were too large to shutter completely anyway. So what we did was we posted notices that they were just not cleaned on a regular, frequent basis. So people have been even using those. But they will now, with the governor's release, we believe on Friday, people will begin using the parks again, and we'll just be saying, maintain those social distances.
Yeah,
the
playscapes do have caution tape on them, but it was ripped down this weekend. So
yeah. be a little hard to keep them all out at this point. So,
I guess I want to make sure we're clear on the dog park. Are we for opening it or not opening it?
It sounded like maybe everybody was comfortable with the phase two, which will come in the first week or two of May. At some point, the governor will make that. Is that what I was hearing, that phase two would be a better time to open the dog park itself? Because that will.
I think that would be prudent. I think that would be prudent. We lost someone yesterday in Sarah's Creek, by the way.
Okay. And it makes sense.
Street.
And like I said, we want to make sure we're acting in the safety side. But just for everybody's knowledge, when we get to phase two from the presidential task force guidelines, which Governor Abbott is apparently going to follow, that will allow for groups up to 50. So at that point, you know, our dog park is probably just going to be, you know, people are going to want at it. So we'll do that. We'll notify, Mona can notify the staff when the phase two is achieved and the governor releases that, then we'll open up the dog park.
And we'll put a notice on the notice of this on the website, I hope, Robin.
Yes. Yeah. And we will send everything that we do to Robin. Mona will send that over so that he knows each step that the subcommittee is taking as we unlock in phases. Because that's why we made that recommendation, because we just realized some of this is just going to happen in the middle and beginning of May and mid-May. And you guys approving the ability to stay where we're at until the end of May just means, heaven forbid, that we had a relapse and went back to phase one, for example. We looked like we were trending in a certain direction, and then there was a spike in cases. Because there can be a spike in cases in Texas, of course, and that wouldn't change anything if it was in Houston or Dallas. But if we saw, for example, a spike in Travis County or a spike in even more locally in the district area, we could return back to all the steps we had taken last month and hold those in place. But we all assume, I think, at this point, that if everything goes to plan throughout the month, we'll be lifting these, just basically following the guidance given by the task force and the governor.
And I'm going to assume that that'll be the same with the volleyball court. We'll just save that for phase two also.
Yeah, because that one typically requires people, even if you come in a group, to get another group to play with you. So we'll keep the volleyball court down for now.
Okay. Thank you.
And everybody also keep in mind, if you haven't had a chance to read these guidelines for the three-phased approach, the first two phases still have all vulnerable people sheltering in place. So even as the governor removes the shelter in place across the state, the first two phases still recommend that persons who have underlying health conditions shelter in place through the remainder of the first two phases. And we'll get those over to Robin so he can add that there as well. So just so somebody realizes that just because things are opening up in the district, they might themselves still might want to make the choice to not participate until further notice is given.
Okay. Do y'all have anything else under item number four, or is there more?
Chris, do you want to take the other item there? Yeah, Chris, do you want to take that one?
No, I think under number four, you pretty much took care of it. Only question was about the water, and I can wait till Robert's report on that.
Okay, do we need to approve the resolution, item number 4C?
Yes, but right before we get to that, and Chris, I think that makes sense. Hold off on discussing the utility matters, the disconnections and late fee stuff until Robert's report. But the restrictive covenant matters, I'm not sure we specifically covered that or if we're comfortable with just leaving that, within the latitude of the subcommittee along with all the other things that were just discussed to implement as they see fit.
Yeah, Carter, thank you. I missed that one. I apologize. For the group, if you recall last month, Brenda and I will still have the ability to meet and to take care of any issues from a covenant enforcement aspect within the district that are what we would call significant or egregious. And then during this phased approach, we could also begin returning to managing the normal covenant enforcement within the district as it makes sense to do so based on the phases as well. So I apologize, I missed that one.
So what we have right now, at the last meeting, we had voted, the district had voted to basically suspend enforcement of these restrictive covenants, except for cases that were a serious safety or health concern, and those that are already referred to legal. So I guess at this point, since that was a motion made at the last meeting, I would think maybe we'd want to go from there and maybe have another motion at this meeting that's more definite. Or we could, y'all could have a motion giving us authority to the subcommittee, since it was kind of taken out of their general authority to handle these things, since it was acted on by the board. Does that make sense?
This is Mona. I would recommend that we just kind of let the covenant, or I'm sorry, the public safety subcommittee just kind of decide as the phases unravel as they start going forward, that we just allow them to maybe go ahead and regulate that and decide how much enforcement we proceed with.
From a legal perspective, want something more definite, just because I want to make sure that things are enforced evenly across the board, I guess. We don't want the public to...
Carter, are you wanting to make sure, you wanting a motion that says that the authority for the... what are you wanting a motion for, actually, Carter? For the covenant subcommittee to have the authority to handle the things that are currently in place to be played out with the covenant subcommittee, and then for other things to be handled as the covenant subcommittee sees fit if they're egregious?
Well, I guess what I'd say is either the board make a motion saying how they want this to be handled in terms of still along the lines of based on safety or things that are already referred to legal, or just grant the subcommittee the ability to do that, but with the condition that they apply a standard that's even across the board. I guess I just want something definite so the public doesn't feel like this is being enforced, on a...
willy-nilly?
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, basis. I think you take my point.
So maybe, Carter, we do this, right? Like, maybe what we say is that the return to regular enforcement for covenants, it would be as you just described, as it was last month, but that restriction would come off once we reach phase two, right? During phase two, we should see a lot more of folks being able to return to their normal employment, group sizes. So even persons who are using professional landscaping services, things like that, should be able to get caught up on their situations. And we already do allow them to kind of plead their case to Mona if there's some sort of family illness or some sort of process going on that we would give them an extension for any particular reason. But right now we would say we would suspend it like we had until phase two. And once the governor goes to phase two, then covenant enforcement would come back. Would that make sense to everybody?
No,
what
really.
I'm hearing...
How long are you going to suspend enforcement, and how long are you going to withhold restrictive... I mean, how long are you going to withhold enforcement and disconnect and late fees and all that?
Oh, so real quickly, covenants is one item. That's what I'm referring to. Chris is going to talk about the late fees and so forth. This part here would just be you and I, mostly with the public safety committee, but we would say we're not going to do any enforcement of covenants until the governor officially moves to phase two, which is just within the next probably 10 days or 12 days. And at that point, we would just basically say, Mona, return to normal searching and identifying covenants in the district. We will handle them under the normal basis we always have. So it would only be for the rest of this phase one that we're currently in, which still has restrictions that are steep enough that it might be hard for some landscaping crews organizations that have lots of employees. But once you get to phase two, most folks should be able to themselves or have somebody else take care of the covenant issues in their district. That was just that side of it.
But I don't think that people who have lost their jobs are going to be able to necessarily get a job in 2 weeks and be able to take care of enforcement issues. You know what I'm saying?
That's why I pegged it to that date, because if not, we could peg it to phase three. It's really up to what you guys think might be the most salient way to handle that.
If I could make a comment, I saw on my neighborhood next door, my HOA went berserk when they started getting HOA notices this weekend. And there was at least 155 comments about, we're in a pandemic and they're sending notices. And
yeah,
I think
that's what I was thinking.
So I think we should just be careful about how quickly you send someone a notice about their broken picket or.
Yeah. Well, and in which case, if you guys just want to do what Carter was originally talking about, extend it out till the May meeting where we can reconvene and look at it at that time. I'm okay with that.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
To do. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So that would.
Do I have a motion to go ahead and postpone this the covenant enforcement until the May meeting?
I'd motion that. This is Felix Amaro.
Do I have a second?
I second, Robin.
I'd like to discuss it before we vote.
Okay.
Though, as far as covenant enforcement of picket fences down, this, that, and another, that's one thing, but the lawn mowing is something that is, there's a few houses that just have got 24-inch high weeds. Those weeds are going to seed, not what we need. I do think we need to get the notices out about mowing lawns sooner than later.
But somebody who doesn't have money to buy gas because they don't have a job, how are you going to handle that, Lee?
I filled my neighbor's lawnmower so she could finish her lawn, and she's only on Social Security.
You're going to fill it for everybody?
Anybody who does at $1.30 a gallon, I would fill everyone in the mud, and I could give Mona the money today if somebody has that excuse. They can't afford gasoline for that. At the price of gasoline today, that's ludicrous.
Yeah, I think Carter might have an issue with that.
Right, but it's a perception issue. Again, it's about giving people notices during a pandemic. I agree with what you're saying in the fact of that it's just an excuse for people to not take care of stuff, but it is a perception issue because they're not going to come back and say it was because I didn't take care of my yard and my grass is 3 foot tall. It's going to be that the mud gave me a violation because I'm not, you know, they gave me an HOA violation or a violation for whatever. It's not going to be because I didn't take care of my yard that was 4 foot or 3 foot tall or whatever.
Carter, did you have a thought on this from the legal side, just as far as how that might, not just how it might look, but how it might play out, especially because if we give a notice, of course, it leads to a process. So if they don't comply, we would eventually potentially find ourselves going to court. And if the start of that process was during this period, would that hinder our chances or ability to move forward in that way?
No, I don't think it poses a problem as long as whatever restrictions aren't in place are enforced evenly. Otherwise, the legal process would proceed as usual.
We need to think about the fact, do you really want to be in the news about the MUD who sent out HOA or MUD violations or restrictive covenant violations because somebody not mowing their grass during a pandemic?
When you've got two out of 100 houses that haven't been able to mow their lawn, it's not a problem of the pandemic. It's a problem of the resident.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Lee. I'm just saying it's a perception. Do you want to be on the news explaining that to the media? That two people or however many people didn't want to mow their yard because they don't want to mow it. And do you think that that's how that's going to be played out? that you were fighting the issue on a principle.
It takes us 4 months to get to a lawsuit stage.
It's not about a lawsuit stage, Lee. It's about when you're standing there when they call the news because of the fact that you wanted to fight your principle.
Oh, that would be beautiful. Their lawn with everybody else's lawn taken care of, they would look like fools. And I'd be happy to point that out. No problem. It's stupid to have people not mowing their lawns. And I'm a person that mows my lawn about every 3 months, but it doesn't get long. I do mow it if it gets long. But it's just something that if you've got weeds, mow your cotton-picking lawn. We maintain our own house, our own lawns monthly around this mud. We can expect that of our residents.
So I'm thinking this, Carter, there maybe there's some sort of compromise between the apparent two camps here on this issue. Not that I necessarily have one, but I'm assuming there's something in the middle here.
Carter, there is a potential one, and it's tied back to the other steps. Because these are both, obviously, we all know these are reasonable positions to have. We don't want the district to fall in disrepair. And we do know that some people might just recently have lost their employment, too, so this may not be the top issue for them is lawn maintenance. But if I'm doing the math correctly, just before the next meeting, if everything went well, Texas would enter phase three, which is essentially, aside from just a few restrictions, is pretty much business back to typical and normal rules apply. That phase might be one that makes sense to at least consider as the middle ground. It would probably transpire between now and the next meeting, and we could re-gauge, Brendan and I could meet and sort of re-gauge where the public perception is on that. If most places have returned to sort of enforcing their normal HOA agreements and things like that, we could just move to do that at that point. And if there was any setbacks or any what appeared to be any larger issues from a political standpoint that is it causing firestorms in other locations, we could just maintain it out to the board meeting. I don't know if that solves the middle ground problem, but it gives us a potential marker in the sand that says everything will at that point have pretty much returned to normal. And just for the record, our normal stand, Mona, correct me if I'm wrong, initially we do try to work with persons in the district in general outside of a pandemic. If you give them a covenant enforcement and they give you a rationale or reason, that it might take them a little longer to fix the item or to mow the lawn or whatever it is. So that discretion would still be there to the district manager to do that in a case-by-case basis, I guess, if we thought that might work. So I don't know if that solves the problem or not.
I'm just thinking of it, if Sue was sitting in Carter's position right now, she would tell us not to do this.
Well,
but if the board wants to go ahead and move forward with it, then move forward with it. If you want to take a vote on it and move forward with issuing citations to people who don't mow their yard and start issuing notices, then so be it.
A notice is not a citation.
Well,
it's just, hey, we've noticed this.
Whatever they're called, Lee. And let the cards land where they land. Put it to vote and let it be where they land. But I have a feeling with Sue coming back and telling us something quite different for making a decision like this, because I think the board knows better.
So you're asking for a call for the question then?
I'm saying because what the question was is, do you want to move forward with going, we were about to take a vote on this. And so I'm saying
right.
Go ahead and put it to vote then and see if this is what we want to do.
I really don't know what the question is, what we are going to do.
whether or not we were going to start issuing, whether or not we were going to start issuing notice of violations or whatever the cards are that Mona issues to people.
Well,
for deed restriction violations, covenant violations. And we were about to not, it sounded like we were thinking of holding off on doing it, and then you said you didn't want to do that.
Well, they were saying till stage three. I think a lot of stuff can wait to stage three. I'd like to see it when we go to stage two that the lawns start getting mowed. Because at that point in time, people can get back out and do more normal things, but not the groups of 50 or 100. Lawn mowing is a solitary practice, and if somebody is out of a job, that's where the plea to Mona, I can't afford to do it, I'm not able to do it. That's where that comes in. When my 74-year-old neighbor, who is on Social Security, who doesn't go to the grocery store, can mow her lawn and talk to her neighbor when she's out of fuel. She asked me to go get her fuel, and she would pay for it. I said, no, let me just fill up your thing. I had a full tank in my garage. It's easier. But I don't see why the man driving the Corvette that has the nice pickup truck can't mow his lawn.
Guys, if I could jump in real quick, this is Robin. I think I heard Felix saying something that I would consider to be closest to the optimum compromise at the moment, and that would be to empower the subcommittee to move forward as they gauge the response in the area. Don't be the first one to start doing this, and let's say if Wells Branch starts doing it, see how it goes over for them, for a week or whatever, but then to leave the final discretion to them that if things look like you can start issuing your courtesy letters, then to start doing so.
I don't mind empowering the committee to do such. I just want to make sure that they understood that the sole board member that lives in the mud and has to look at the houses that are not mowing their lawns, that you heard from me on that. Because none of the members of the committee live in the mud.
We do in our minds. No, but it's as opposed to making either side of this too resentful of what action we take, I think with your perspective in mind that we empower them to move ahead as soon as it seems like the smart thing to do and not wait for the next board meeting or the next board meeting. But with Brenda's in mind, at least try to see if such actions are working for people in other areas around us. It shouldn't be too hard to just make a contact or two.
No, that sounds prudent. I have no problem with that. Waiting the next meeting. If it doesn't need to wait to the next meeting, let's not wait to the next meeting.
That's what I would say, unless they uncover some big controversy somewhere, brouhaha, and really don't consider it prudent to go forward without everybody being on board. I think that they should be empowered to do so if it looks like it's a good step at that time.
Guys, this is Carter. It sounds like everyone's had a fair chance to voice their perspectives and concerns here, and it's sounding like there might be a compromise on the table. If someone would like to make a motion, I think we need to move on pretty soon here to make sure we get everything on the agenda.
So do I have an alternate motion then?
I could make that motion, which would be to maintain the current covenant enforcement policy from the last board meeting to the next board meeting, but empowering the covenant enforcement subcommittee, the authority to move off of that standpoint when conditions allow. If it comes before the next board meeting.
Yeah, that's essentially what I had said.
Do I have a motion? I mean, do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Director Cobra.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any
aye.
Opposed? Okay, sounds like everyone's in favor. Okay, thank you. Do you have anything else under item number four for that subcommittee?
This is Carter, but I just want to make sure that we have the resolution designating essential government functions and personnel under the Travis County COVID-19 stay-at-home order. I want to make sure we have that passed. And that basically just says what is a essential government function under Travis County's stay-at-home order. And self-explanatory.
Can we amend Appendix B to include board members?
Yes, I can certainly do that.
Okay.
I'm sorry, you wanted to amend what, Lee?
There's an appendix B behind this. It's the supporting documents of who's who. It has our consultants. It has our staff. It has the city of Pflugerville. Has all these people that we're saying are essential staff, but we left ourselves out of it.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. Okay, do I have a motion approving 4C, but with the addition of the Northtown Municipal Utility District board members?
This is Director Caper. I so motion.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Robin, second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Sounds like, do I have any opposed? Okay. Looks like everyone's in favor. Moving along to item number 5. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of the March 24th board meeting?
This is Capers. I so motion.
Do I have a second?
Robin, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 These mute buttons slow us down.
I know, right? So
yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Anyone opposed? No? Okay, everyone approved. Item number 6, Robert?
All right, thank you very much. First of all, I'll start with the directive. It was the presented list of accounts that will become 120 days delinquent between April 28th and the regular May board meeting, which is, I have a list of possible ones, but if they pay, they won't be delinquent by our May board meeting. There's 11 accounts on there. This is kind of typical, though, for this time of the billing period. The ones I have on here are the same old folks that just keep paying enough of their arrears to stay. You know, they pay their past due eventually at the last minute to keep from getting turned off. So these are not folks that are affected by the pandemic at all. These are folks that are, at our time of our last meeting, they were in arrears already. So, and also I added up their deposits for all of them, and the total deposits outweigh what their arrears is. So, I don't think that's relevant right now to present that list. We can watch it next month. It'll be more of a telltale sign of what's actually going on. So right now it's pretty much indicative of what your normal operations is. We have had one resident fill out a hardship form, and we granted them a payment agreement. they as well were a repeat offender for years and years, but they did present that they did lose their job because of the COVID pandemic. So we went ahead and they agreed to a payment agreement. So I don't know if y'all have any questions on that part of it.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. Write-offs, there's three on page 11 of my report for a total of $493.52. Need to get your approval to write those off, send them to collections. And, again, these were folks who were finalized in late January and early February, so they had nothing to do with the COVID. They are no longer in the district and have not paid. So we need to probably send those to collections.
Do I have a motion to approve the write-offs?
I make a motion, Robin.
Do I have a second? Was there a second? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
I'll second. This is Director Capers.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you.
Aye.
Thank
and
you.
Director Capers, I think you had a question you were going to ask. Earlier.
Yes, just a couple of things. First of all, the safety committees are making the recommendation to continue kind of what we've done the last month for those that are still unable to pay all their water bills to have the ability to go through the payment plan process, which I appreciate you giving us an update on the accounts that are kind of questionable. It doesn't seem like a ton of accounts, so that's a good thing. We're making the recommendation to continue, or I guess Crossroads to continue to do that through next meeting or May the 31st, also to coincide kind of with the phases that the governor is talking about. And I had a question. Does anybody have any questions about that, or does that sound like something that the board would be in favor of continuing on the way we've done at least for another month?
Yeah, Chris, I think that helps us avoid a sudden surprise potentially. If too many people flop over from 80 to 110, let's say, during a month. So
that's kind of what we're thinking.
Yep.
Robert, for you, I had what is the – has the usage, and I imagine, has gone up significantly since this has happened, since most are in stay-at-home, stay-in-place, and also what is the percentage of the gain lost? Now, I'm not talking about the one that you sent us because that's just pretty much through March, which, you know, this kind of hit us the last 2 weeks of March. Is it significant? The increase in water?
No, actually, the water from February to, and we read right at the end of the month, the March usage actually went down for the residential use and also total use. I'm sure in April it will jump back up again. We'll have to wait and see when we read the meters at the end of April to see what happened, but right now it's gone down a little bit.
But you are imagining, since you're the water operator, you're imagining it should really spike, right? It should go significantly higher this April, correct?
I would think so. It's hard to say how much. You don't have a lot of commercial where people stayed, you know, away from their jobs. So it's pretty much all residential. So, yeah, I would expect it would spike.
Yeah, March was fairly wet, too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that's all I had. Thanks, Robert.
Oh, you're welcome. And that's
Thank
all
you.
I have, unless there's other questions.
Okay, Robert, do you have anything to comment on 6D?
Yes, thank you very much. I don't have a copy of it, but I think that's the report from the TCEQ when they did their inspection of the district water system, which they do every couple of years. And there were no violations. Got 100% positive on that, as usual for the district. So that's all good news.
Good to hear. Thank you very much, Robert.
Awesome.
Okay, you're more than welcome to stay on the call, or you can drop off if you'd like to, so we don't have to worry about any more static. Not that you were giving static.
I'll take my static elsewhere, I guess.
Great. Thank you so much for your report, Robert. Be safe.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Okay, Mr. Fidal, landscape report.
This is Carter. One more thing, Brenda.
Yes, sir.
I just want to make sure that we get a motion like we did last meeting on the utility matters, so we have something in the record saying that we want to extend the policy that is in place now with Crossroads until May 31st, I believe, is what Chris suggested and everyone tacitly seemed to be on board with.
Do I have a motion? Do I have a motion to extend the policy that we have for the utilities until the end of May?
Yes, Robin, I motion.
Okay, do I have a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Okay, great. Mr. Fidal.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
All right, good. Real quickly on the monthly report for March, we're on schedule with all the spring maintenance tasks and projects. There's nothing uniquely in addition to that that I should tell you about other than the cool season ryegrass is starting to transition out, so it's going to look a little bit messy as the summer warm season grasses come into play. Happens every year. Otherwise, I won't read any of the report to you. Things are looking good out there. Let's go to item 7A, directive. I had a directive to remove a certain target area of the yellow invasive cabbage, and we did that promptly after the meeting, as well as went through the district, found a few here and there, and got them taken out, so we'll stay on top of those items. The next items, B through F, are various proposals that have been discussed with the Park Committee and MONA, and all of them are within the various budget line items where they may fall for 2019-2020. I'd like to go through them one at a time. Let me give you a short pitch on them, and then if you all have questions, let's address them as we go down them, if that's okay with you. The first item is a temporary landscape maintenance proposal. It's for the areas, the new areas that have been taken on, and it's a simplified type proposal that's a combination of a schedule and a fee structure, and it's written to be month to month as long as you need it until these areas get developed out and we determine what the long-term sites are and what kind of maintenance they will need. If some other areas get cleaned up or ready for the maintenance, we can easily add them to this in the future if we need to. Basically, there's a map that's on the second page. Can everyone see the map? And what that map shows is green-colored areas that are set up to be weekly maintenance during a growing season, which usually is about 42 visits a year. And the yellow is monthly mowing and litter pickup services. The difference there, if you look at area 7 at the top right-hand corner where it says channel, that's actually a formal improved channel there. And it actually gets 12 services a year because in the winter months or the heat of the summer months when we might not mow, we still end up having a litter factor and or sometimes some silt factors that we work on. So that is 12 times. All the other yellow areas are more like your green belt non-drainage areas, and usually they get 8 full services, and then we sweep back through and just spot pick up litter. And so this proposal is to put all those areas on a routine schedule. It helps us keep the gain of the areas that we've already cleaned up and cleared and deemed important to keep an eye on into the future. Questions, comments?
Okay. Do I have a motion to approve this proposal?
Yes, Robin, I motion that.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second. Lee,
okay,
a second.
Thank you, Lee. Do I, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Anyone opposed? Okay, great. Thank you. Richard, move forward.
Okay, thank you. Item C is proposal 9628. This is an annual seasonal task that we do. It's going through all the different landscape bed areas and seeing what has made it through the winter, if anything has deteriorated over time, and offering replacements. This proposal, again, is within the budget number. Sometimes we do this twice a year. There's often a early fall version of it. But if you'll flip through the images, you can see where we've sketched in where we want to add plants back in and or replace plants that weren't doing well.
Richard, I'm going to go ahead and let you go through each one of these proposals, and then we'll take them in. We can move through them quickly for the approvals.
That's fine.
Okay.
All right. Item C.
No, D.
9638. Item D is 9638. This is tree clearance, pruning, trimming trees up to 8-foot height. If you look at the attached map, the green highlighted area shows that area. It's a new area that abuts to your existing trail on the right-hand side, you can see. And we're pruning these trees to match the appearance of the rest of that whole general existing park area.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on that one?
Also a photo showing the difference.
Okay.
Proposal 9649, item E, is again something we do from time to time. With the rains this year, the poison ivy is coming back into play in some of the traditional areas, as well as heavily in some of the new areas. And this proposal gives us 4 full-day applications to use at will to target and control the poison ivy in high-use areas.
Okay. And then F, 9651.
The last proposal, 9651, is brush and tree clearance pruning in the new property 7, where it abuts our existing 50-acre park. If you'll flip to the first photo image, it highlights a triangle in an area down and along a fence line. This is a super thick area. The nice thing about it is the creek flows through part of it, and it does have a lot of existing nice hardwood trees. The goal here is to go in and get out the undesirable trees, the invasives, some of the brush, open up the area to see what we have and to expand the use. Everything to the right of that triangle is the current 50-acre park and trail system. And then the property line access allows us to keep some maintenance going. When we first went in to do some clearing, we couldn't get in there. It is so thick. And so we actually created a path that we could walk and drive and see what was going on along the property line on the neighbor fence side. There's a little easement. Now, this puts all that totally back into your property and much wider. And then if you'll take a look at the picture, you'll see the existing park on the right, how it looks, and that triangle starts taking off to the left. There'll be more to do there sometime in the future once the design teams decide what's really going to happen to that property or how we're going to do it.
Thank you, Richard. Do I have a motion for approval for proposals 9628, 9638, 9649, and 9651?
I'll motion that, Director Amaro.
Okay. And do I have a second?
Director Hill will second.
That was Director Hill. Okay. Everyone, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Can I interject?
I'll work with Mona.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir?
Oh, just going to ask if I can interject a question real quick.
Mm-hmm.
This last proposal, is going to abut New Parkland onto the 50-acre park, is that going to necessitate a name change for the park?
It certainly will. I don't know exactly what it is until I see how far we go and what the condition and lay of the land under that thicket is. And so I didn't include that in the maintenance proposal at this time.
Well, I was just wondering.
Do you mean because it's going to be more than 50 acres?
Yeah, it's going to extend the park. I wondered if the discussion was call this another park or just call it more of the big park.
I can't
remember how that was addressed in the park master plan, but we might have to look at that.
Yeah, it's just a curiosity more than anything.
This is really the first step because there's likely to be trails, et cetera, going into it to get it in the same true shape of the shape of the 50-acre park.
Right.
Yet to be designed.
A general comment that, you know, like your other parks, this is separated by a natural drainage feature, so it does have the opportunity to be named whatever you all want to call it. So,
for the record, I think 52.3 out to six digits might be the new name.
Right. There's the engineering portion of this. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be a curiosity people could come see.
There you go. Have more visitors.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Richard, very much.
Yes, thank you, Richard.
I'll stay through the next two items and then I'll depart.
Okay. You're more than welcome to. Okay. Mona, district manager's report?
My reports are in the packet. And as you can see, we did refund some reservations for the pavilion that had obviously reserved a party. We refunded their money. The solid waste report is in the packet, and don't think the subcommittee had any comments. I do have a purchase request I'd like to request to have the authority to enter into an agreement with a preferred vendor to build a metal gate, much like the one that we have at the 50-acre park. At the end of the dead end on Lantern, where the new office land is, and I've run this by the parks subcommittee, and I'd like to ask for not to exceed $5,500 for a new gate very similar to the one at the 50-acre park.
Do you need a motion from the board or?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Do I have a motion to authorize Mona for not to exceed of, what was it, $5,500?
Yes.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Robin, I motion.
Do I have a second?
Director Capers, I second that.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Okay. Great. Thank you. Mona?
Okay. I have a little bit of an update on the Wildflower Pavilion area. The boring was done by Holt as approved by the board, and they have let Barnaby know that the testing samples will be in this week and that they're hoping to have the full report to Barnaby at our architect by next week. And they're running behind because they have a staffing shortage right now due to the COVID-19. And then Scott had a letter to Meredith from Travis County. Scott, do you want to speak about that letter?
Yeah, these are just, as I think I mentioned the last board meeting, we submitted the Wildflower Park Pavilion project to the various governmental entities, Travis County, City of Austin, and the ESD, and this is just acknowledgement that the ESD has approved the plans. The review of the pavilion project is still pending in Travis County and City of Austin, will be ongoing for several months. Related to that is we have made the same types of submittals to Travis County, the ESD, and the City of Austin for the Administrative Office / Sledders Meadow project. And again, those actual approvals will take several months.
Okay. Mona, did you have anything else?
Scott, was there an easement acquisition comment to that?
I apologize. Thank you. I didn't have the written agenda in front of me. Adjacent to the administrative office building on the western property line, you recall that property owner is the, what I recall, the Johnson Trube or Wells Branch multifamily developer. That's the group that we worked with access easements in the past. We would like, we've been discussing with them a possibly acquiring a temporary drainage easement on their property. It'll make our construction much easier on the office project by not having to deal with the drainage, potential drainage issue. That developer has been open to it, granting that easement to us, and we'll bring back any formal documents to y'all in the future, but we did want to bring it to your attention that we are kind of working with that developer, and they seem to be amicable to working with us to acquire a drainage easement on their property if needed. If they move forward with their construction ahead of time, then we won't need to do anything on any easements. So.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. Item G, I think.
I have, under item G, I have the PML benefits, employee benefits contract in the packet, and I would like to very happily report that our rates did not go up for the second year in a row, so I would like to request permission to go ahead and sign that form and send it into TML.
Do I have a motion?
Robin, a motion.
Second?
Felix, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And then I have...
Aye.
Thank you. Anyone opposed? No. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. And then the second item was the COBRA continuation of coverage. They never actually updated that form last year, and I kept calling about it, and they were having issues, electronic issues, and never got it updated and just said it would continue in force. That's the same situation now. They still don't have that and continue it forward until they do. But if they do come up with a new contract, I would like to have approval to go ahead and review it with Carter and then go ahead and sign it and submit it as well.
Sorry, I was on mute. Carter, do we need a motion or directive?
We don't need a, actually, you know, whenever in doubt, it's good to have a motion. Let's go ahead and get a motion on that.
Okay, do I have a motion?
Yes, Robin, I'll motion.
Thank you. Okay. I have a motion from Robin. Do I have a second?
Director Capers, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, thank you, Lee.
You know, when he said he's over there, he means it.
I'm telling you, I have to always wait because I'm waiting for the one to come through. Okay, are you done now, Mona?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, Scott, are you going to take up the park recreational facility?
I'm sorry, I was on mute too, this mute thing.
I know, right?
Underneath item D, you recall that the over the last year or so, the villages at Northtown were donating 7 tracts, and these were kind of loosely identified in Richard's maps earlier. We recorded deeds on 5 of the 7 earlier this year with the understanding that upon completion of the improvements on the remaining 2, which would be the administrative office building and the pavilion project, we would be able to record those deeds. There was a stipulation last month that there was a cleanup, and that fund was released to the developer on that for some on these tracks here. And what you're seeing in front of you underneath item 9D1 is the actual acknowledgement from the city of Austin to that they have, you know, approved and accepted the improvements that were identified in the agreement, and they're okay with releasing the fiscal on both of those projects. So that's 91. 92 is just an acknowledgement letter that more towards the water and wastewater utilities that we took those for acceptance last month. 96 is related to we're seeking a temporary easement for access along Heatherwild over there. The villages at Northtown have an existing gate that we just like to be able to traverse through rather than constructing our own gate and tearing up the fences. And the villages were allowed for a temporary access easement until that project develops, and we can address that in the future. So that's very receptive. The parks improvements on the Wildflower Pavilion project, there was a question that came up regarding what we'll call a fire department hammerhead and the timing thereof. The villages, we identified that that was approximately $25,000 or $23,000 item. And after talking through the villages and working with them over the last month and a half and talking to the subcommittee, park subcommittee, the villages and park subcommittee have recommended that the board accept $11,500. Carter, I don't know, can't remember the exact amount, but approximately 50% of that cost will allow us to make those improvements when we construct the Wildflower Pavilion project. I'm going to go backwards into and summarize what we need to do here tonight is we need to accept the deeds and authorize Carter to record the two deeds for their two remaining tracks. We need to release or authorize the release of the funds for the escrow to money for both those tracks. And we need to accept the recommended, I'm not going to say settlement because that's not the right word, but the roughly 50% of the hammerhead improvements as a condition of the parkland acceptance. Carter, do you want to add anything to that?
I'd just throw in there as well the approval of the easement.
I apologize. Yes, approval of the easement, too.
So do I have a motion for those items that he just listed?
So moved.
That was Lee?
Yes.
Was that?
Yes.
Okay. And do I have a second?
Yes, second, Robin.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. Thank you. And just to be clear, what that means is we got a check for $11,000. Is a net. So basically the village people paid for half of that hammerhead project, which was really great work from Carter and the guy talking, which all of a sudden I can't think of your name. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Yeah, we'll go by the engineer. Scott. Sorry about that, Scott. I like my medicine I take.
She's got Biden disease here. No. Can I ask just an off-the-wall question, because I may have missed the discussion. On item 9D5, what kind of kiosk are we building?
There's in the agreement with the City of Austin, the villages agreed to basically construct a signage on the Wildflower Pavilion project, and I can remember several months ago, the district discussed with the villages, since we didn't know what that signage wanted to be, that the villages posted, I believe, $10,000 for us to construct or spend up to $10,000 of their money on a future kiosk. So that kiosk sign is probably going to have to be discussed through the administrative office committee back to the sign committee, what that sign wants to be. It's been envisioned to be similar to the 50-acre park. And, again, that money the remaining money is being held in escrow until we construct that improvement.
Okay, I guess there's just a terminology mismatch. To me, a kiosk is a small sales building kind of like Sunglass Hut in the mall. That's a kiosk.
this would be a logo sign like the one that we did with the map and the big letter N, and then, you know, a small plexiglass.
Well, see, we've called them monuments. We've called them everything, but I've never heard them called a kiosk before.
We're going to build a Sunglass Hut.
Yeah.
We'll blame it on the Parks Department over there. So.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was going to be, something where possibly somebody could sell ices during the summer or something.
No.
You know, we would have a permanent location, so.
Definitely not.
No.
Okay.
Oh, well,
did you get
was my question.
Did you get everything you needed under 9, Scott?
I believe at this point in time, after we can officially say we have all of our parkland that's coming to us, which is nice to have behind us. So, yes, I do.
Oh, really?
That's
last
parkland
that's
coming. That's all of it. All 7 deeds will have been recorded.
Wonderful.
So,
great job. Thank you and Carter very much for that work.
Well, thank you all.
Okay, so now do you want to give your engineer report?
Yes.
Okay. We're looking for your official introduction. Scott, item number 10.
Good evening. It is 7:12. we are entering the district engineer's report area. Underneath your development updates, I do want to let you know, I've been mentioning this for a while, I did remove some of the dormant projects out there. We have some developers who had purchased some land, who had gone through some preliminary work with us, and we've removed those. So the list that you currently see under item A is what we're considering your active projects. Under item A4, which is the Village at Northtown multifamily, I briefly introduced this to y'all earlier underneath the administrative office about a possible easement with them on temporary. They are going to need to enter into a construction agreement with the district to cross part of the new parkland or the parkland we have now over there. This is incidental utility work, nothing major. But we'll have to enter into a formal agreement, as well as they're going to have to dedicate some other typical water and wastewater drainage easements. What I'm asking for y'all on that is to just direct Carter and I, and I guess that's Brenda and Lee, since they're working in that park area, to work with the developer and bring back those agreements and easements to the board in the future. So that's a directive request. To do that. I don't know if that needs to form a motion or just tell me to do it.
And which one is that, Scott, for which item? Sorry.
Underneath the Village at Northtown multifamily, under item A4.
Okay. Carter, does that need to be a formal, how do you want to handle it?
No, a directive sign for that one.
Okay. I guess it's been
again,
directed.
Okay, we'll bring back anything related to that in the future. Under item 5, Lakes Retail Center, this is related to the convenience store that's going to be located at the Lakes Boulevard on the kind of the western end of there of the Boulevard district. This came before y'all several months ago, and you know they're nearing completion of their plans, and they have submitted plans for the restrictive covenant review committee, which I believe is Robin and Felix, to review their plans. And once they approve it, we'll be approving their plans for construction. So that'll be an active project. Under item under item B, the MS4 permitting, really no updates. Item C, your Destar Road Force Main replacement project. You recall there was an action, you know, we're nearing the completion of that project, and y'all issued checks last month on that project for us to provide to the City of Austin. We have been sitting on those checks because we're trying to clear a couple administrative comments, but we also have kind of an administrative hurdle with the City of Austin that they're not open to receive money. So we have worked with Alan to figure out the appropriate way to wire that money to them since the board has previously approved that, should we not be able to take checks. With that also said, I note there that Travis County did approve our plans in April, which is important. And in conjunction with the bond application, we expect this project to probably go out to bid probably late summer We want to make sure the bond application has been approved, and we'll advertise for bids probably August or September. I went through quite a bit, so that's my update. But if y'all have any questions, I'll be happy to go backwards.
Anybody have any questions? Okay. Alan? Thank you, Scott,
very much,
by the way. Uh-huh.
All righty. Did everybody receive the – did everybody get an update from Deborah for our report? It's just our typical handout that we have at our meeting that has our action items and that sort. I'm going to go over that with y'all. If you're looking at that, we have several transfers we need to make for the month. Remember, we're paying until things get back to normal, we're paying all the disbursements out of the manager's account. So we need to move some funds around to help cover those. We've got a $240,040 transfer of funds that we need to make out of your ABC operating account. Since we're not using that account, we'll move those over to the Textbull operating account until everything gets converted on the billing system on the Crossroads side. We've still got that Chase account open up, so all the credit card payments and stuff go into that. So we need to move $225,000 of funds out of that account over to your operating account there at Textbull. We have two transfers into your manager's account from Textbull, a $41,100 transfer, and that's to replenish the balance for the activity that we've run since we last met, and then $590,776.52 of funds to cover the disbursements that we'll get your approval on today. We also have a $3,000 transfer that we need to make out of your Textbull account into your deposit refund account that we set up to process those monthly to fund those for this last month. Also have service collections that have gone into your Compass lockbox account, so we need to move $150,000 of funds out of that account over into your operating account there at Textbull. If you look at the third page of that handout, it's kind of mice type at this point since we have so much this month. We've got a I met with Felix on Friday, went over all the items that don't have an asterisk next to them. So toward the top third or so of the schedules, you'll see those are the disbursements that we made outside of the meeting that were time sensitive, utilities, things of that sort. And then below there, we have your disbursements today. I'll say all the items without the asterisk again, major packet. So I'll go over each one of those. We went over that, Felix and I did last Friday. But we did add some lab fees with Round Rock Environmental Services. That's the city lab that Crossroads is using now for your back teeth. We had an invoice for Texascape, small invoice for irrigation repairs. We had a small invoice from District 10 related to the City of Austin rate dispute. We had a additional director fees for Director Amaro, Capers, and Campbell. And then related to the gate that I believe Mona mentioned earlier, we have a down payment with Prestige Ironworks for a 50% down payment there for the $2,700. So I don't really have anything else to add. I did want to say we do have things ready to go as far as wiring funds to the City of Austin. If it comes up that we need to do that, however Scott resolves that issue. And if I could get somebody, either you, Carter, or Scott, send me something, I believe we need to, from the discussion on the park, I think we need to issue a refund for $10,000 on the fee that we're holding. Is that correct?
We already released that $10,000, so you're okay there.
So
that's what
we approved last month then, right?
That's correct. Y'all issued that check, and he acknowledged receipt of it today.
All right. So, Scott, we don't have any – Carter, we don't have anything else to do. I thought you mentioned something earlier. We might have something.
The cash security what is it, Scott? Like $300-something thousand dollars for the improvements on the wildflower lot and administrative office building lot. Those need to be released, those funds, to villages.
Okay. If I could, so we need to write a $300,000 check for that? Or are we going
whatever
to wire
the amount money? Is. Well,
one of the amounts was $162,237.50, Alan. And the other amount was $152,070.
Yeah, we've got two accounts set up where we had parked these funds for the park improvement, two separate accounts that we set up. Do we owe interest that was earned on those accounts back as well?
I think that's probably the case, but I'll get with you after the meeting. I'll look at the
relevant.
Yeah,
if you don't mind. I just don't want to make sure. I just want to make sure we don't drop the ball on this. So if I could get something, then we'll take care of that. And then I guess Carter had received wiring instructions for him to send those funds, and that would work best for us as well, since those funds are sitting in tech pool to wire those funds out. So I assume y'all have approved this, but just want to clarify that we'll wire those funds out once I get everything from Carter. That's all I've got. Michelle, have any questions? We just need your approval on those transfers and the updated list of disbursements that went out.
Do you have a motion to pay bills and invoices and transfer funds?
I move pay bills, make transfers, and whatever else we need.
Okay. There's a motion. Do I have a second?
Second. Director Amaro.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank
okay.
you all.
Thank you very much, Alan. Okay. Mona, are you – who's doing the security report, please?
We have a security crime stats in the packet, and those have also been sent over to Robin. Felix, Chris, any more comments?
Okay. Any purchase requests?
No.
Okay. Great. Any landowners or landowner representatives, developers that need to report on anything? Didn't think so. Okay. Any wholesale water, wastewater rate challenge information, Carter? I don't have any.
Nope. I haven't heard a peep from them, but I assume once this COVID stuff starts to clear up in the next few months, things might start moving again.
Exactly. Okay. Your items, Carter?
Sure. So if we look at 15A, we have the Travis County Appraisal District. The preliminary estimate of the 2020 taxable value, and that is on page 152 of the PDF packet. The highlight of this is that TCAD has sent the district its 2020 estimate of net taxable value, that number being approximately $794 million. The certified net taxable value for 2019 was $801 million approximately. So they're close numbers, but there is apparently a potential that there is a slight decrease, although this is the estimate, not the certified value. So certainly there could be less protests than anticipated here, and we could see a different certified net taxable value for 2020. Than the estimate that's currently in front of you. The new value, as you can see, is about $4,800,000 added to the district's tax base. And as Lee had brought up, I believe 2 months ago, the county actually, the appraisal district is not reappraising residential properties this year. And that's kind of a strange development, but it is accounted for in the law. It's because of, and I just pulled up an article here that I've looked over a few views to really get filled in. It's really as simple as the Austin Board of Realtors got into basically a fight with the appraisal district over the appraisal district using the multiple listing service, or the MLS, to calculate the appraisals. And basically, the TCAD has always gone and used that service in order to get these residential values, but now they can't. So they're deciding not to go in and use an inaccurate method, which would be something like sending out, I don't know, you call them surveys to people and having them send back information individually. And they just decided to go with the same values for residential properties as last year, with the exception of adding the additional value due to new construction. And Lee, I know you were looking into this issue some as well. You seem to be privy to what's going on here. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, you've covered it pretty well. I do have a friend that sits on that board, and so I'd known about it last November. I do condemn them for waiting this late to even publicize it when they were actually planning it last November to do this. It was very bad for the appraisal district to wait so long to mention it to us officially.
Yeah, certainly could have had information earlier. Hopefully they get this figured out and then coming years are able to reappraise the residential properties, but that's something I don't know the answer to at this time. Anyway, that covers that item. Let's see. And
well, one other quick note, this is Alan. Hey, Carter, real quick. One other quick note. I noticed as well, I heard in some other meetings that, and it, y'all may know this anyway, these are values on January 1. So if you've got people coming in trying to protest their values related to loss of value based on this whole pandemic, I think what I'm hearing is going to fall on deaf ears because that's going to go into next year's values. So I don't know that we'll see a downgrade, whatever you want to call it, in the values for this right now with these values that we're looking at. So
I think that's right. I guess it makes sense to a degree that they mentioned COVID-19 in their letter to
right,
us,
but exactly.
It won't have
exactly.
any bearing on this year. So thanks, Alan. Then the next item here, unless anyone has any questions, is the cybersecurity training update. I sent an email out to everyone. Let me know if you didn't receive it on Tuesday, April 14th, with an attachment, basically with all the information reminding everyone that we need to, all the board members and Mona as the manager need to go in and complete this cybersecurity training course in accordance with the new law passed last session. It's you go in and watch a 17-minute YouTube video that was approved by the Department of Information Resources. You basically complete and self-grade a little assessment that I attached to the email I sent, and then you can just send a copy to me or Deborah. And that the deadline, again, is June 14th. I think some of y'all have already done this. I know Chris and Lee have. But let's see. Yeah, if y'all have any questions about that, let me know. And if you didn't receive the email, I can send it again. And then the last item is 15C, the TML Summary of Claim Experience Report. We get one of these every time there's a change in status of one of the claims, and the most recent one is at the very, very bottom of this two-page summary of claims. And Mona, fill me in if I'm missing important details, which I'm sure I am. The lightning damage to one of the district's properties, that claim has changed from being open and pending to closed and settled.
Correct. That's about it.
That's all I got for attorney's report.
Okay. Are there any other items for future agenda items?
So
no.
I'll go ahead and say that just. I think there's a chance that the board might want to consider
actually having a physical meeting next month, but it might want to wait a few months. I don't know. I just wanted to broach the discussion briefly to see how y'all felt. Certainly fine at this point to have one next month, but there is a chance, and I'll let y'all know, that the governor's office rescinds the modifications to the Open Meetings Act that were put in place to allow for these teleconferences like we're doing right now. So,
meaning that we would be no longer under the authority to have one?
And right now, exactly. Right now, I don't think they're going to do that. I think we'll still be able to have next month's and maybe in the next months over the phone. But just want to give you all a heads up and kind of just start the discussion in case you want to talk about it.
Are we able to talk about that now or no? What is just a general consensus about having it as a teleconference for next month?
Well, obviously it works better for me. But
yeah, I'd say this. I think this makes sense unless he lifts the order, right? He's the only person empowered in the state to give us the freedom to do this, and if he rescinds it, we don't have the freedom to do this. But I think then we would be – the goal here would be by the June meeting, we would have almost a full month in Phase 3, at which point we would probably be fine to meet again. But the May one, I wouldn't recommend we meet unless he lifts the order.
Right. I'm glad to hear that you feel that way, and unless anybody is totally – 100% against this, it would be my preference to have a telemeeting again. Being somebody who has elderly parents, I'm not personally I would prefer to keep it this way. Unless my work forces me and tells me I'm going to lose my job unless I come to the office, and we talked about it today that and my boss knows exactly where I stand with it. So that's where I stand. My agency's
telecommuting till the 31st, and we are the busiest agency in the state.
Yeah, I bet you are. Yeah.
Yeah, I would also, as the director of papers, I would also say that I'd prefer to have a meeting like this because I do have an autoimmune compromised daughter. So I'm not comfortable unless I'm told I have to.
Okay.
Right.
Anybody else? I know I heard you. Okay. Good. Okay. Glad to hear that, everybody. So I think you have it. And given that information, do I have a motion to adjourn?
I motion to adjourn, Robin.
I'll second all of them.
Okay. There you go. All righty then. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Aye. Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Y'all stay safe and have a great evening.
Yes, definitely.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.